When I tell you that we look at every revenue stream as incrementally influential in making judgments about our projects. So we'll look at power purchase revenues, we'll look at tax credits, we will look at RECs revenues or carbon revenues, and we will factor all of those into, you know, marginal decisions about a project. It may not be a go, no go, but it may well be a, you know, can we build a project in a 30-mile-an-hour wind regime instead of a 32 or 33-mile-an-hour wind regime? Can we afford an extra mile of transmission in order to interconnect or not? Can we put that last string of wind turbines out at the edge there where, you know, they will still produce at a marginally positive rate and produce more renewable resource? Well, we can do that if all of the revenues add up. So those RECs revenues are very influential in influencing developers' decisions at the margin, and that's where all the dollars have their impact, at the margin. The voluntary RECs market that we started 12 years ago is now about a $200 million a year national market. The compliance market, same product, but this is utilities buying RECs to meet, for example, their renewable portfolio standard obligations under state law. You know, they're frequently allowed to do that. That's probably at least another $200 million. And then a number of these renewable projects are now moving into the direct carbon reduction markets, and that's adding up to additional dollars. And these are all additional dollars that flow back into the renewable energy development process. They have that incremental additional effect on moving projects forward. Through those projects, they have the effect on the designers and engineers who try to squeeze another, you know, 2 or 3 megawatt hours of efficiency out of the next wind turbine design. Commissioner Fritz asked where the money goes, and the answer is it goes to the developers, but of course then it goes through to the developers, to the manufacturers of the wind turbines, to the designers of the wind turbines, to the companies that help us site the projects. So the dollars flow to real substantial gains for renewable energy in the market. I mentioned the compliance market, and I want to emphasize that RECs also are extremely useful, for example, to both PGE and Pacific, because they both have renewable portfolio obligations. And one of the ways we basically make their meeting of those obligations more liquid is by allowing them to meet those obligations to a limited extent through the purchase of RECs rather than the direct development of projects. That projects are really lumpy investments, and renewable energy credits are very liquid, linear expenditures. And so it makes it easier and therefore more cost-effective for our utilities to meet their RPS obligations if you have an active RECs market in play. The voluntary and the compliance REC market both apply to that. All that said, I guess I would want to close with a couple of quick observations and then maybe get to your questions if you have them. You know, one is that I would trade in every sort of workaround that we are using right now that includes RECs, it includes carbon reduction markets, it includes Betsy's and production tax credits and, you know, CAFE standards and all of the other things we are using to try to get at carbon reduction indirectly. I'd trade them all out for a national carbon tax or a national carbon cap that would actually make it a lot easier and less costly to meet city and state and national carbon goals. The last thing I guess I would observe is that contrary to the Oregonian's editorial this morning, which has a, pardon me, fairly myopic focus on very short-term costs, it should be clear to everybody in this room and elsewhere that we are already paying what were originally characterized as the long-term costs of climate change. Just in the last month, to pick a time frame, there was a report that we shaved the drought in the Midwest, shaved about a half a percentage point off of this nation's 2012 GNP, half a percent It's a huge impact. Now commercial traffic on the Mississippi is being interrupted because there's not enough water coming down out of the Missouri and the Mississippi to float the boats. The shellfish industry in Puget Sound is now under threat from acidification, which has a huge adverse effect on production there. And, of course, there's Superstorm Sandy, which is going to be a minimum $50 billion hit, and probably more than that. And while not all of these are directly affecting Portland and Oregon and the Pacific Northwest, you know, our time is coming. So that's a admittedly somewhat
informed and intelligent
broad
description of what's happening.
But this is why it's important for you to pass this.
Thank you, sir, very much, and for your great work and service, mostly behind the scenes on these and other sustainability issues. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
So I was going to ask Angus. I remember when we did the Wellfield solar field.
Yep.
There was a comparison to that and other like size solar fields. Do you recall what that was, or maybe what it is today?
A comparison in terms of
size and the amount of electricity being produced.
Well, it yes, it was. I'm trying to remember. I think 260 kilowatts, which at the time was a very substantially sized project for the Pacific Northwest.
Yep.
You know, up until then we had been doing them in, you know, 10s and 20s and 30 kilowatts. I think East Portland Community Center was a 30 kilowatt project. No, I'm sorry, it was an 80 kilowatt project. 260 kilowatts was a very substantial step up from that. They've been doing these in California and Arizona, but they have both higher energy prices and more sunshine. So it was a significant step. Now we are doing megawatt size projects in the Pacific Northwest. So your project is now enshrouded,
obsolete.
But it served its purpose.
me and it.
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. So both of these items will be heard again next week, second reading, and we have follow-up to do with questions that were raised here. Can you please read the title for item 1352? And before you do that, I told people we would leave the record open if anyone had additional testimony to submit through the end of that week. We got no additional testimony, so today it will be, please read the title, call the vote, right?
For 1352?
1352, thank you.
Adjust the utility license law to revise tax rate and tax base for telecommunications utilities operating within the city. Leonard?
Well, just to be a little redundant from what I said when we originally heard this, this is a small incremental increase to pay for important services as part of the Department of Justice settlement and providing better police services, but it should be viewed in the larger context of where Portland and Oregon sits in the United States in terms of total taxation, and we are towards the bottom of the list. Doesn't mean that we need to do everything we can to get to the top of the list, but it's clear we have a revenue issue in this city that this alone won't fix, but helps a little bit, and I appreciate the mayor's focus and efforts to bring this forward. Aye.
Fritz.
Well, we did receive hundreds of phone calls and hundreds of emails and additional testimony, and I appreciate the folks who, particularly those who wrote in with individualized emails rather than sending the same thing. It was interesting to read how misinformation has gotten out on this issue. As was spoken last week, there are 213 landline companies operating in Portland, a number which I find astonishing. But there are also some very big companies that are already paying the 5% tax, and there are two, CenturyLink and Frontier, that are not paying it. So in terms of being fair to everybody receiving the same services and providing the same tax rate for all utilities, this is a first step towards tax parity, and I appreciate the mayor bringing it forward. It's very important to note that this ordinance does not dedicate the revenue raised to any particular purpose. Those decisions will be made by the council next year, the 2013 council, looking at all of the allocations and cuts that will need to be made to pay for needed services in Portland next year. So I have considered all the testimony, and I'm still very much supportive of this step towards tax parity. And thank you, Mary Beth Henry and the Communications Office, for all of your good work. Aye.
Fish?
I came home last night from a wonderful evening at Geldwin, celebrating great soccer, and had a robocall on my phone. And I'm a AT&T customer. There might be a there might be some connection here. And it was a robocall purportedly from the Taxpayer Foundation of Oregon or Taxpayer Something of Oregon. And the message was...
Oregon Tax Watch?
Taxpayer Association of Oregon.
Taxpayer Association of Oregon.
Oh, okay.
Is how the person identified himself. He said, stop the city council from adopting a $5 million tax. This comes on top of an additional $850 they've imposed on families, which I'm guessing is a calculation of the effect on a median family home of the recent tax measures adopted by Portlanders, not by the council. And then it went on to say some other fairly inflammatory things, including that this would disproportionately impact seniors and low-income users. Now, I celebrate the fact we have a First Amendment, people entitled to frame their arguments as they want. I was a little chagrined, though, that as a AT&T customer, I think I was targeted because my guess is that AT&T wanted me to have that message from the Taxpayer Association. And I, as a general matter, don't like getting robocalls. In fact, the state of Oregon has some rules about robocalls generally, particularly at election time. So I'm going to follow up with AT&T just to find out whether, in fact, my customer information was given to an advocacy group without my consent. I'd be interested to know how that happened. Again, people are free to frame arguments any way they want, including make misleading arguments. And from that robocall, I've received some emails, along with Commissioner Fritz, that have repeated the arguments that were in the call. So I'm going to support the item before us, but I'm going to just build on something Commissioner Leonard said. If you go back to the 2009 audit, a fundamental question was raised about equity between cell phones and landlines. And that's the question that ultimately I hope a future council takes up, because there is embedded in our current system an inequity. And frankly, there's a seismic shift going on in terms of the kinds of services people are using, particularly young people. And frankly, if we look at this comprehensively under the broader framework of equity as suggested by the 2009 audit, we might be able to reach a situation where some people pay a little less, some people pay a little more, but we have also a fair revenue stream. But I look forward to that conversation. But I think the matter before us is appropriate. And Mary Adams, I appreciate you bringing this forward and the briefings that I've received on it. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I find this issue to be a vexing one. It's a complicated one, too. But I think there is no doubt that this will increase the tax on landlines. And it does disproportionately typically affect seniors and elders, because landlines, to me, really are lifelines. They're much more affordable than any kind of a cell phone with its package by a wide margin. And while that could be taken to mean I'm going to oppose this, but I also think that landlines continue to be a bargain, regardless, with a modest increase in the tax. It does move to a more equitable way of doing franchise utility license fee collections for Comcast, Integra, and now CenturyLink. Although CenturyLink does make a good point, they pay a 3% federal excise tax, or I should say we landline customers pay that 3% excise tax that are not paid by landline customers of Comcast or Integra. So I think, long and short, as I will support this, I do think it does bring equity. And I do think that, as I said, landlines continue to be a bargain. And I like landlines. In fact, I've got one right here.
Princess phone.
I've got one at home.
At least you have one. Yeah. I no longer have one.
I've got one at home as well. And I think landlines have a lot of attributes that people like myself want to keep a landline. For one thing, a landline will work when the power's out. And I think from a public safety and overall emergency preparedness, that's a great thing. I also think the quality of the voice on a landline is far superior to cell phones, which are always, you know, fading in and out and all that. So I do think that this tax is going to be a modest tax, probably an additional maybe $12 a year for average. And I think a lot of people like myself, you know, when I look at my utility bills, you know, I look at the tax portion, or if I'm paying a hotel bill, you know, you look at the tax portion, you say, oh, you know, there's always somebody adding something, state, federal, local.
There must be a problem.
But it doesn't persuade me one way or the other not to stay at the hotel, not to, you know, do something that's going to disassociate myself with that particular utility. So I think this is something that I believe our citizens will tolerate when they understand that it's going to be used in part to pay for our compliance with the Justice Department consent decree to better respond to those in mental health crisis. Although I do say, as I've said earlier, I'm not convinced totally that the amount of money we're talking about for the DOJ settlement of $5 million or so is really what we will spend. But this will help us to pay for those obligations. The obligations are not zero in terms of our responsibilities funding. So I will support this and vote aye.
Adams?
Well, if you believe in equity, as most of the telecommunications, some of the telecommunications folks that have testified, and I'm sure you're all registered lobbyists and appropriately disclose how much money you spent on the robocalls as required by city law. But if you believe in equity among different forms of telecommunication, then you have to believe at least in equity amongst the same forms of telecommunication, and that is amongst landlines. That was a beautiful love letter to landlines, I must say.
We've got one too. Look at that.
I know. It's very, very. I have a princess phone too. Look at that.
Wow. Like, mine doesn't work, Mayor.
That's because you disconnected it.
Hannah found savings in our budget by disconnecting my landline.
So I find it, you know, this is the city shouldn't be making choices that, you know, Integra Telecom gets charged, you know, under one sort of fee and tax approach, but Frontier is charged under another fee and tax. That just is fundamentally unfair. And the unfairness of between cellular telecommunication and landline communication is a good point as well. This is an incremental step towards equity. I look forward to, as Citizen Sam, watching the council take on the issue of cell taxes in the next 4 years. God bless you. I'll be here to testify in favor of it. Aye. Approved. Can you please read the title for item second and call? Oh, please read the title, and I'll recognize Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor.
On item 1353.
Authorized 2012 Washington Park Transportation and Parking Management Agreement at Washington Park.
I don't think they can.
Commissioner Nick Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. Carla, could you hand out the red line version of the agreement with the proposed amendments that we are going to move today? And while Carla's doing that, I just want to provide a little context. 2 weeks ago, thank you, when this matter came to council, we heard some testimony from some folks from the community who expressed some anxiety both about the speed in which we were operating and about the lack of clarity on some issues of concern. Based on instructions which I received from my council colleagues, we scheduled a meeting promptly with the three folks who came before us who had the most focused concerns. That was Joe Angel, Susan Siegel, and Brian Birch. And we listened very closely to their concerns. And I brought Mike Abate, the director, Todd Lofgren, my senior policy person, and me. And we sat down. And frankly, we began the meeting by apologizing for any miscommunication that had occurred. We do have a wonderful relationship with the neighborhoods in question. While we understand that philosophically there are some people, every time the council takes up the issue of a TMA, who are opposed to the introduction of parking, we understand that. We also understand that when we take additional time to listen to concerns and react to them, what we can get is a better product. Out of that came five specific changes that we have incorporated. They are mostly in the nature of clarifying our intent so that the concerns that were raised are memorialized. All of these have been discussed with Metro, that is, concurs with them. That is, that this would not require us to go back to Metro, reopen the whole matter, and have a second vote. Let me just summarize very briefly the five items that we addressed. Number one, there's new language to clarify that the 1,400 parking places spaces are the proposed areas for paid parking, and that some trailheads will remain free. That was a concern. Number two, new language to clarify that neighborhood transportation issues related to Washington Park are within the scope of the TMA's work, and the TMA's programs will consider solutions to these challenges. An important point, because while the money that we generate in the TMA will be spent within the largely within the district, which is Washington Park, we recognize that there are impacts that extend beyond those boundaries into the neighborhoods. And so we have clarified that it is a matter of TMA concern about the impacts into neighborhoods, which also means potentially that the TMA could take action to mitigate within neighborhoods. Added language to reflect that the shuttle service will connect public transit service in order to maximize light rail utilization in Washington Park. You heard that concern, particularly about wanting to have a shuttle from, I believe it was Goose Hollow. Number four, added language that the TMA will administer a park and ride program that is targeted for neighbors during non-peak times, consistent with previous agreements. We heard that there are currently a number of people in the community, in the affected neighborhoods, who use park and ride. They wanted that clarified. And added language to include bike and pedestrian improvements to clarify that bike and pedestrian improvements are part of the Washington Park transportation infrastructure eligible for funding. That was important because some of the folks we talked to wanted to be clear that it wasn't just about investing in streets, that it would extend to bikes, to bikeways, and to sidewalks and other infrastructure, frankly, in part because many of the people who live up in the affected neighborhoods walk through the park and they want a safe experience. Those changes we had back and forth with the folks that I talked to. Joe Angel, who is a frequent guest here, subsequently I had a conversation with him to ask him whether he felt that we had met the concerns that he did. He said yes, and in fact said he'd be relieved not to have to come and testify today. And so he has chosen not to come because he feels we've made the appropriate changes. I think there's some people who've signed up today to testify. I will simply close by saying we understand that anytime you talk about change and change around introducing parking meters, that there are people that are either philosophically opposed or who have heartburn because they're not sure how it's going to work. And I think it is, again, a sign of our responsiveness to those concerns that we have strong neighborhood participation on the TMA. So this is not a situation where neighborhoods are going to be coming as advisory groups or as testifiers. The two most immediately impacted neighborhoods are actually on the TMA, at the table advocating for their concerns. I thank the folks who did the follow-up meeting with Mike and me. We learned a lot, we listened, and I think what we established is a commitment on both sides to continue this dialogue and be responsive as neighborhood concerns arise. And so the changes are before you in red line. They reflect the five substantive changes we agreed to. And I understand there's some people here who want to testify because this is technically a second first reading.
So I recognized you. Did you make a motion?
I would move the amended agreement.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. This will serve as the purpose for more discussion.
We have to actually vote on the amendment to get it before us?
No, he just moved to substitute.
Right, and then we have to vote to actually substitute it, and then they testify to that.
I was just about to do that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize.
If there's any discussion on the motion, if not, Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion?
Mm-hmm. Leonard?
Aye. Vote aye for the purpose of, sorry. Mm-hmm.
Pritz?
Vote aye for the purpose of discussion.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye.
Amendment is the substitution is approved to serve as a basis of discussion. Commissioner Fritz?
No, I was just wanting to pay attention.
Oh. Unless there's additional discussion, please call the first four.
First four, please come on up. Are Dave Malcolm, Francine Storbox, Brian Birch, and Claudia Martin?
Hi, welcome to the City Council. We're glad you're here. Please take a seat. Would you like to begin, sir?
Thank you, Mayor. I'm Dave Malcolm. I'm going to first talk as a board representative of the Sylvan Highlands Neighborhood Association.
Okay.
I'd like to speak after everyone else as an individual. For the board, Carla, we have some documents for you and a copy for the mayor and the commissioners. Our concern is with the transportation, parking, and management agreement that you're working on today. This TPMA will change Washington Park in the future. It is precedent setting, and the changes are big. Public involvement is necessary in this. To date, there's been discussions with parks and Metro and the venues and about a dozen neighbors from Arlington Heights and Sylvan Highlands neighborhood associations. These dozen individuals, give or take, is hardly public involvement. We've been talking about land use issues, the auxiliary lot between the Forestry Center and the Children's Museum, a good neighbor agreement, and our shared long-term visions and goals for the park. Back in June this year, thereabouts, Brian and I and Joe Angel and Eric Nagel of Arlington Heights met with Kim Smith and Scott Robinson. We met outside of the normal meetings where you have two dozen people or so, just because we wanted to talk about things and in a small environment and be able to focus without a large committee to deal with everything. We were shown the TPMA at that point. We were told it was a draft. It was basically to change the lease agreement between the venues and the city and Metro. We were told not to disclose it to the public, to our fellow neighbors, and we were not able to read it or get a digital copy.
Who told you that, sir?
Mr. Robinson.
Mr. Robinson?
Yes, sir. Okay, I express concerns that, you know, if this is going to form the Transportation Management Authority, there should be a public process and so forth. It's like, nope, this is just between the lease and the leaseholders and the property owners. It's that type of deal. Okay, it shows up about 3 weeks ago when Metro votes on it. We have shared interests and long-term goals. I like living in the neighborhood. I do walk through the park several times a week with my dog. I walk on the streets because there aren't sidewalks in the park. I make a point of walking on the left side so I don't get run into by cars. But when we talk about A and B happens, it creates suspicion. It doesn't build trust. We want to trust, but we've learned we have to verify. So I'm going to be talking about that stuff some. We need public involvement with this TPMA. It hasn't been there. You know, a dozen people talking about it. Yes, ma'am.
You're out of time. Why don't you go ahead and you just made your remarks as a representative of the neighborhood. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
And I normally don't allow for you to come back for a second bite of the apple, but this time I will. Can you give me your thoughts then as a resident?
Could I ask a question that might help a little bit? Help you focus your remarks. Aside from whether or not we agree there was or was not a public process, what specifically about what you're looking at do you see as a substantive problem?
That's what I was going to address in my private remarks. So I'll jump into that. A big part of the changes that are going to happen at the park are going to be with the TMA, the Transportation Management Authority. This document forms the TMA and is the guideline. This document didn't have public input or process, and in forming of it, it talks about forming the governance of the TMA. It talks about the details of how the TMA is going to be managed. I agree that we should have a TMA. However, when we look at this, We have the neighborhood associations being discriminated against and treated differently than all the other board directors. You're going to have 9 directors, 2 agencies, well, agencies and the destination venues, and 2 for the neighborhood associations.
No, but
so
they're
your,
on.
Your opposition is the lack of representation on the...
My point is the neighborhood directors are subject to approval by the Parks Commissioner. None of the others are. Well, why do we have to be subject to Parks approval? We have independent organizations. We are able to select who we want to have represent the neighborhood. Is someone just looking for a puppet that they can manipulate? I don't know. Why are we being treated differently? It doesn't seem right. There's been no public input on that. It's just that the venue said, here's the plan.
So and are there other specific areas you have?
Yes. I think public input is necessary. There should be two.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but let's set that aside. There may be a disagreement about whether or not there's been due public. We had a hearing here 2 weeks ago. That's part of the public process. We halted the proceedings so the public could have input. So if you could focus on very specific substantive.
I'm getting to that.
Yeah.
There should be public representation on the TMA board. I suggest adding 2 at-large director positions. You know, someone from the east side or someone from the metro area could be a very good representative of public concerns. This is a regional attraction. It's not just the city's best park. You know, people come here from different states and further.
Can I just comment on that, sir? Because that's a two-edged sword as I've thought about that, because if we were to take that as the guiding philosophy, technically I might have to open it up to the 95 neighborhood associations to see sort of by lottery which 2 would be on the board. We've actually given the 2 most immediately impacted neighborhood associations a privileged position over the rest of the city to sit at the table because we understand the impacts are different to them. But when you start talking about broadening other voices, then we get into questions about really how do you do that? And there's fairness issues, in my opinion, of sort of picking and choosing who else. And the problem we've experienced with other TMAs is that for a TMA to work, you need to have the people who have the most significant impact, skin in the game, commitment. You can't have people just showing up occasionally. I'm confident that the 2 neighborhood associations we've partnered with are going to have diligent representation, and they're going to have a full voice at the table. And TMAs, as the mayor will chime in, operate by consensus. TMAs don't operate with closely divided votes and drama. The whole idea is to get everybody on the same page, which we thought by having uniquely placing 2 neighborhood associations into the mix, which I don't know has been done at any other TMA to this level, would give you the voice. I understand that is different from the trust question you've raised, because trust and verify is my motto too. But you're at the table making all the decisions. I can't give you any more power than that.
Thank you, Commissioner. I wasn't suggesting that the other 2 at-large directors should be neighborhood associations. It could be something like a cyclist or a business interest or something.
Have you made the proposal about at-large representations to anyone on the council?
I have not spoken to you, no. I have submitted a letter from the Neighborhood Association and also my own personal.
Did you propose that at Metro when they had a public hearing?
Yes.
You proposed 2 at-large?
Yes, we proposed 2. We had 2 different ideas, perhaps.
Could you introduce yourself, sir?
Hello, my name is Brian Birch.
Turn on the microphone. Just hit the button.
So, Brian, if you mentioned it at Metro, is there any reason why 2 weeks ago, either at the hearing or when you and I had a chance to meet, why this issue didn't surface? I didn't put a limit on whatever we could talk about when we met, and I encouraged you to share any concerns you had, and we did a 24-hour turnaround. I'm just curious, if it was important, why wasn't it raised at council or in my meeting?
Well, it's been raised several times in our meetings with the zoo and Metro and the other players at Washington Park. I think, to answer your question directly, I would claim ignorance. I didn't realize that was the appropriate place to raise it again, but I've also been experiencing over the last 18 to 20 months this sort of gradual wearing down of neighborhood concerns. We've come in with 1 or two very specific concerns. We want a safe, livable neighborhood. We want a place where we can walk on the sidewalk and do our living safely. We have made suggestions like having two members from each neighborhood association to counterbalance the weight of the various WPA attraction leaders and Metro and Parks. It's been pointed out that it's fundamentally nine members, but it feels to us, because of the trust issues that you acknowledge, that it's seven against two. And
well, actually, another way of looking at it is you have twice the seats at the table that Parks does. I mean, in terms of just how we've structured this, we have a seat and the neighbors have two. I mean, one can look at this in any number of ways, but I can assure you, and we've talked about this privately, our intent wasn't to minimize the neighborhood voice. It was to give you not only a seat at the table, but maximize it.
I think I would agree with you if I had a more confident feeling that what was actually said in our meetings and what was actually conveyed or brought to the public was the same item. I would get behind you and say, yeah, I think you guys have a great plan, and I think that this is something that the park could really benefit from. The trouble is, and it always seems to come back to this same issue of, I just don't believe it yet, because things seem to shift from the discussion phase to the seeing it on paper phase. And I've read the recent redlined version, and I have to say, I don't think the language is strong enough yet. I think we're on a great course for conversation, but that's, I believe, what our association has been spending most of its time on, wanting to have a voice that is heard, not just a voice.
So if I could get back to testimony, everyone's helping me today. I appreciate the discussion, but I do want to give everyone a chance to talk. So if you could wrap up quickly your personal views, I think you were summarizing for us, that might be in addition to the views expressed as leader of as representative of the neighborhood association.
Okay. There are several aspects in this TPMA that are supported by the Sylvan Highlands Neighborhood Association. We support parking, paid parking in the main lot in the zoo area. We definitely support the Washington Park Master Plan revision. We support the TMA as a mechanism to address the more global issues of traffic and parking and maintenance and improvement of the park. We want park improvements. So we have these big goals. The thing is when you get down to it, the devil's in the details. This TPMA talks about the big goals, but also does quite a few little details. The difference between the details in there and the bigger picture, I think that's what we need the greater public involvement in. This thing has been rushed around. Commissioner, you were just talking to Brian about, you know, we had recent meetings or something like that. The TPMA became public 3 weeks ago. I read it a week ago because I've been on vacation for a week, and because of work duties, I couldn't come to the council meeting 2 weeks ago. I couldn't come to...
So when you said that there are details, are you saying those are details you're concerned about, or those are just details? So, like, if you
details
were trying
I'm concerned
to...
about, I could easily offer you my red lines to that, and I think they'd be generally accepted.
Can you just give me two details that concern you, just so I get a sense when you, or is it in your letter?
It's clarified in my letter. You know, you look at the two letters, and that's got plenty of details and analysis there.
Okay, great. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Hi, welcome.
Hi, I'm Francine Storsbach, and I'm speaking as a citizen of Portland.
Could you get a little closer to the mic? We don't have the world's best sound system here.
Okay. All right. Going to Washington Park should be a pleasure, not an imposed pressure, forcing visitors that have gone there to relax, to watch the clock, and fear a fine if something delays the return to the car. I'm talking about the 400 spaces outside of the zoo, the people that go there to hike. Okay. Some people have no choice but to use cars to get to the park. They're either far from public transportation, they have mobility problems, and other people that will be affected by meters outside of the zoo will be negatively affected because of just being low income. And they go to the park to hike for free, and they will lose it. When I speak to neighbors in the park and visitors, none of them seem to know about any of this, about the parking meters going up around the Hoyt Arboretum and Japanese Garden or anything above six spaces. And most of them are pretty appalled by it. It's almost as if it's been kept a secret from the public, and I want to know why there have been no stories on the news and no press releases. I only found out about this accidentally because I go to Sylvan Highlands meetings. Public process is needed. The entire city needs to be aware and to be informed, not just the neighborhoods adjacent to the park.
So you object to parking meters
outright? Well, not at the zoo.
What's that?
Not the zoo parking meters. That I understand. Every zoo in the country practically has paid parking.
So anything outside the zoo parking lot?
Hoyt Arboretum and the other areas.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Hi, welcome.
Hi, my name is Dr. Claudia Martin. I'm on the board of Sylvan Highlands, but I'm also right now speaking as a citizen. This resolution was presented to Metro, and the signatories were all W. Washington Park venues. There was no signatory that represented the public, and this is, for me, the largest problem. I want to make clear that during the 18 months that Park says we were included, the talks were not about meters and WPA. It was about the zoo. We really have only had 3 weeks. Commissioner Fish, I appreciate that you met with several people. I was away, unfortunately. Otherwise, you would have seen me, too. But an apology for not including us does not make up for substantive
input. Let me be clear, ma'am. We didn't apologize for not including you. We've had 23 public meetings over 18 months. And the draft outline of this deal has been a matter of public discussion since July. What we apologize for is any miscommunication where someone felt like they either didn't fully understand or didn't have a full chance to participate, because we are sincerely interested in hearing all the voices. It was not quite the way you characterized it, but we are a learning organization, and if we can do a better job, we will. But 23 separate meetings with key neighborhood leaders, neighborhood associations, briefings, and other things is at least a good faith effort on our side to engage the neighborhood.
Okay, I will reiterate that those meetings did not cover meters in the park, did not cover the transportation plan. Some ideas evolved, but those meetings were regarding the zoo bond and the auxiliary lot. And that has to be made very clear. Furthermore, a point our letter from the board states, we are two neighborhoods. We do not represent all of Portland. This is a Portland park. It is called the Jewel of Portland. Other neighborhoods need to be involved, not just our two neighborhoods. We are not making decisions for the whole of the city and whole of Metro. There is a precedent for procedures when parking meters go in. I think, Mayor Adams, you know very well the Northwest parking plan. I looked through that in 2009. A resolution was put forth. There was citizen advisory committee. There was analysis. There were surveys. I mean, it was a huge process, which ended up in a 103-page document in 2012. Every district has different issues. I think Washington Park has unique issues that are with the venues, with our neighborhoods, as well as Goose Hollow, Kings Heights, other neighborhoods that abut the park who were not included, and then, most importantly, the full public. So there are circles. I also want to say that I looked on the parks ordinances. There is nothing on parks ordinances about metering at parks. There's everything from tree cutting to hours of parks. On the city website under parks. There's nothing about metering. I understand Willamette Park was the first experiment in metering at parks. And I think that this just cannot be a decision made from parks without public input. I also want to say that there are ordinances about good neighbor agreements, which we have not yet resolved. There are also ordinances regarding recreation fields and notification of the public. And in a way, one could say that Washington Park is a recreational field. Since time is running out, I want to go directly to some of our local problems. We have discussed with PBOT serious problems on Skyline and Fairview, which are gateways into the park. You say 3 million people come. Well, they're coming through our neighborhoods. We need to have some speed controls, like speed bumps. We've talked about roundabouts to help this situation. But what we're hearing, although now you've amended slightly that some revenues might come, we are being adversely affected by these 3 million people coming through our neighborhoods. We welcome them, but we need to somehow mitigate the problems. I know that with parking districts, a certain portion of the revenue goes to the neighborhood for improvements. I do not think our neighborhood should be separate just because this happens to be a park. Finally, I do want to say when I've spoken, since we've only had 3 weeks, and that is not adequate time to mobilize, when I've spoken just to friends and colleagues off the cuff about what's going on, the two reactions have been complete surprise and then outrage. I want to sort of paraphrase the British. This is the People's Park. And I think we really have to recognize that this needs public input. I would like to suggest that the zoo has 1,000 places. They're already trying to, by the volunteer method, get people to pay. That's not working. It's not efficient. And to put meters at the zoo makes sense. It is the 400 other meters. At the moment, we asked for a map. Where are these going to be? We don't even have that. So I really ask you to table this until there can be working on the details and full public notification. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony.
Mr. Malcolm, I tend to think, and I will offer an amendment to this effect, I do think that the neighborhood associations should appoint their members to the TMA, not the Parks Commissioner. So I will make that amendment. But I wanted to ask you, I mean, what is it that you fear? I mean, give me some examples of what you fear about being outvoted on. I mean, what is it? Just, you know, hypothetical.
Groups of people talk about this. That is done. Commissioner Fish just said this TPMA has been a draft available since July. Scott Robinson showed it to us at a meeting.
That's
an example.
Okay. I'm talking about what kind of real-world decisions would you worry about being outvoted on by the TMA?
It's not the power balance that I'm worried about.
I guess.
What's important to me is process. Details get to the process. How are things done? Has been done without public involvement.
I'm providing some latitude because I know the importance of the discussion and part of your concern is not being heard. But for the record, because we've got folks that have to transcribe this, even though it's incredibly repetitive, it's before your talk, if you could just say your name again. So that was Mr. Malcolm. He introduced you, Dr.
Claudia Martin.
Did you want to say something?
In answer to your question, I think since there are nine yes. potential seats, seven are the venues. The venues can work on block, and we've already seen that in some of the discussions with the zoo, and so we are concerned.
Commissioner Saltzman, I was going to propose an alternative amendment, which is along the same lines but slightly different, and that is that all members of the TMA should be confirmed by council or subject to the agreement of council, that there could be nominations from any of the other seven members who are known not to get along with everybody else and could.
As soon as we hear from our last folks.
I just like to think
about
that.
We'll hear from everyone that's waiting to testify, and then I will recognize folks for possible amendments, but I'm not going to do it before then. Sir, you had an opportunity to have a little bit of dialogue, but you came here to say something.
I did. My name is Brian Birch, B-R-Y-A-N-B-U-R-C-H. I also live in the neighborhood. I've had the privilege to speak directly with Nick Fish, and I've had the privilege to speak with all of the players from Metro and all of the Washington Park venues. It is most important to me as a citizen that these issues of public safety and livability and the ability to get along with our neighbors, meaning the venues, is the first priority. And I've been involved with this I'm surprised to hear you say 23 meetings, because by my count it was only 16. But I've been at, I'd say, all of them. And my efforts have been, from day one, to make my neighborhood safe to walk in and to make my neighborhood safe to bike in. And to respond directly to your question, Mayor, where I see inequities between 7 versus 2, if that what it could come to, is that in this process over the last 18 months, our position as a neighborhood association and my position as a citizen has been that safety issue that I just outlined. And each time it comes before a group, the group being the potential people who are going to be on this group of 9, that issue is constantly pushed aside with the statement, it's outside the park, it doesn't count, we can't pay for that, it doesn't fit into our agenda, and things like that. The way I see this is Metro wants to divest itself of the responsibility of paying for parking and maintenance in the park. They no longer want to be responsible for something they do not own, and so they have pushed this outward to onto you to make a decision to turn it into something that can make a profit. We've been quoted $2 million a year as the potential profit for the parking meters in this system, and that could fund a great many things which are listed in the document that you have before you. I am in favor of many of those ideas. Where I still come back to each time is that the idea that we brought as a group to this body in informal conversations and in formal meetings with the potential TMA members are still not being addressed. And this is 16 to 23 meetings later. Why should I believe that in the future it's going to be addressed as it should be safely for all these 20, for these 3 million people who are going to come to the park?
So if I could ask a clarifying question around safety. So are you saying that your concern is that the definition of safety in this in this authorizing document limits safety expenditures to only areas that are active parks and not the streets to and from or go through parks? Is that?
That is correct. The only street that is a city street is Fairview Boulevard that goes from Arlington Heights all the way up to Skyline. That is a city street, and the city is responsible for it. All the other streets, as Mike Abate will tell you, belong to parks and are treated as park elements, like a jungle gym or whatever else is in a park. As you know, they have been cut drastically over the last several years, and they need money. And this is a great opportunity for this.
So what aspects, just so that you can help me, is it section 12 on Mr. Malcolm's letter that is the section that you would identify as needing amendments to address your concern? Or do you not know? It's just a general
exactly
a general concern.
I don't know exactly how to do it, but
a general concern or?
Yeah, there are gateways, as Claudia pointed out, there are gateways into the park. Skyline and the big one is the one that comes in off of Highway 26 into the zoo area, off of Zoo Road. But the areas that come up Burnside, up down Skyline, up from the lower part of the park, are also gateways, and they are not in the park. They are outside of the park. And many of the places on the Sylvan Highlands end have no sidewalks.
So I misunderstood. I thought you were arguing for, and we'll have staff come up here, that the safety expenditures related to mobility, transit, transportation within the parks and the gateways of the parks should be considered for something the money could be used on. Are you also, though, suggesting that roadways that go well beyond the entrance of a park be considered as well?
I think it would be wise for the TMA to map out those areas that are actual travel routes. And you know, if I was on the TMA now, I would be suggesting how, you know, what is the envelope of the venues that are attracted into the park, which is a much larger envelope than the park itself.
So I want to give you a chance to respond to a spoken or unspoken concern with that is, I mean, we lack in transportation funding as we lack in parks funding. You could easily use up all the money on just the streets leading up to the park. I want to give you a chance to respond to that.
Can I respond?
Just a second. Use up, yeah, the document pretty much outlines how the money is going to be spent for the next 10 years already. So I don't see a large amount of dollars that are available to put a sidewalk, say, all the way up Fairhaven from end to end. You know, I am one concerned citizen, and as Mr. Fish pointed out, on issues like this, you should be hearing from a lot more people than just one concerned citizen or four concerned citizens. But Skyline Boulevard, Fairview Boulevard, these are all accidents that we have. We have, you know, okay. 10 accidents.
So I would, is it fair for me to summarize that where park users face imminent threat on some fixed routes that we all know in and out of the park, that those should at least be considered for access to some of this money?
I think you could fairly summarize it that way. Yes, I do.
But not necessarily they have to fix all the problems. Sidewalks are really expensive. I would love to have them all over Southwest. So I think I get your point.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Doctor?
And I just wanted to add to that. I was the president of the Transportation Committee of our neighborhood, and we have worked with PBOT, and they have recognized the problem, and they say you're on the list, but, you know, we might be number 50. And it really is getting worse and worse with the increased population, especially westward. So this is a big concern that we could have this. But again, I want to say, I mean, we're talking about details. I could tell you many details. That,
sure.
For example, there hasn't even been a survey. Right now, the parking lot is empty at the zoo and all over the trailheads. In the winter, everything shuts down. So why should people pay parking when there's maybe 800 empty parking spaces? So things like that, these kind of details need to be worked out. Yeah.
I need to, as the commissioner in charge of parking, this is a parks project, but outside of things like parks, I'm in charge of parking. I want to give you a chance to respond as well. I find that people who don't want to see meters happen are never satisfied with the process if it includes meters. And they sincerely and genuinely believe that when they seem to present a sincere concern about process, but in actuality, they just don't want to see meters going. I would like you to just do a check and tell me, would you support meters with, I guess, more process?
Already stated, I think 1,000 of these 1,400 places I am supporting, because that's at the zoo. That would cover a lot. What I'm not supporting is the 400 where we don't even know where they are. I don't even know if there are 400. And this would impact every person who wants to jog for half an hour or to walk their dog.
I understand the concern.
Yeah.
So your concern is with the 400?
Right.
Okay. I appreciate the exchange.
You'll find that concern as our official Sylvan Highlands Neighborhood Association concern as well.
Great. Thank you all very much. I really appreciate it. Anyone else signed up to testify?
Thank you.
No one else signed up.
Okay. Commissioner, do you have any? Can we have staff come up?
Let's bring staff up.
I have some questions for staff, sure. And I apologize if they're repetitive from the last meeting.
Mayor, before we discuss proposed amendments, if we could have staff answer any questions that you or others have.
That's what I'd like to do. It's all right. So where are the mysterious 400 meters going to go?
So
identify yourself, Don.
Sure. My name's Todd Lofgren. I'm the Property and Business Development Manager for Portland Parks and Recreation. As mentioned, there's about 1,000 parking spaces from Hoyt Arboretum down to the south entrance of the zoo. And then as you head north, all of the parking spaces that there's trailheads along the way, there's 4 or 6 spaces. Those all would remain open, free to the public without the paid parking. As you head north, then there's the archery range is the next largest area in the park.
So trailheads do not have paid parking?
That's right. Where okay. There's kind of two reasons.
About the Arboretum.
The Hoyt Arboretum parking lot would have paid parking in the parking lot and then immediately across the street. Because it's right away on Fairview there wouldn't be any paid parking on the street. And then as you go down through the Arboretum, the road that goes through that's sometimes closed, there wouldn't be any paid parking down there as well. That would be open. And then as you head north on the north end of the park, of course, in front of the Japanese garden and the roadway and the tennis courts and heading out to Park Avenue.
And in fairness.
And that would be paid or unpaid?
Correct. That would be paid.
Okay. And I've had some